Welcome, everybody, to the Helpful Hip Dysplasia podcast. We are lucky enough this time to be joined by Trevor Hackett, who is from Idaho over in the States. Age 35, we've got a number of surgeries under our belt and a slightly different perspective to come to the hip dysplasia community. I'm really grateful to be able to have this conversation. So welcome, Trevor.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
It's really great to be able to open up this conversation because, like, you've had a slightly different introduction to getting your hip replacement to some of the listeners that will be following along to this podcast. So even though the diagnosis was different, you've ended up having surgeries that a lot of people in this community end up having. So you've had both of your hips replaced. So I'm just really curious to hear a little bit more about your journey, where it started, when you started realizing you had hip pain, and how that kind of diagnosis and journey started, where it ended up. Could you give us a little bit of info?
Yeah. So I'd say starting probably late 2019, November, December, I was just having some weird hip pain when I was riding my motorcycle and just kind of weight-bearing pain, just standing. And then it kind of progressed into where I needed crutches. And I went, it was about 6 weeks after that, I went to my doctor and I got an MRI because it was to the point where it was affecting my work, my daily life. So I got my MRIs done and they said I had avascular necrosis, which I never heard of before. So it was kind of a new thing to me, which pretty much is like there's no blood flow going to certain parts of your body. And in most cases, it's your hips and your shoulders. And so I got that diagnosis and got a second opinion from another surgeon and the same thing. You've got this avascular necrosis and you need to be scheduled for surgery like next week. So I was scheduled for surgery in March of 2020 and then COVID hit. And I was put on a reserve list or a elective list for quite some time. So that's kind of how it started.
So that's a pretty quick turnaround from having, I mean, it may have seemed like a lifetime to you. And I suppose I'm coming at it from a sort of perspective of the hip dysplasia community where some of us, you know, like years to get a diagnosis before you get your surgery or even you know, a diagnosis, any kind of treatment intervention be taken seriously. So I suppose from that perspective, it seems like a really quick turnaround, but from having that pain, the consultation, the MRI, and then being put on the list for surgery, like being told it was potentially going to be next week.
Yeah, it was like, in total, it was, I think, 6 weeks, the first one. It's like from initial pain to getting my first replacement was 6 weeks, which is pretty quick, you know, with, you know, hip dysplasia people, it could be years, you know, it's a constant buildup. And for mine, it was just one day I was having no hip pain. And then one day I just had a little bit of pain in my hip area. And I just wanted to get it looked at and you know, I decided to go in and get it checked out. And that's what I found out.
So with the avascular necrosis, because obviously that's something that, you know, from our previous chats, we know has also affected your shoulder, which we'll come back to in a little while. Do you have any information or were you kind of told about why this has happened with you and your body specifically, like where it came from, like what's kind of been a cause or a contributing factor?
That's the weird part. They don't really have a definitive answer where it came from. I asked, you know, genetics. None of my family members have had any sort of bone diseases or anything like that. I was a really big skier, like ski jumper when I was young. So I think that might have something to do with it. Like a lot of impacts, you know, I skied for 15 years pretty hard. And I think that might have had something to do with it. So, cause there's nothing else. I don't really do a lot of crazy stuff, you know, so it's not like an injury or anything made it worse. So it's kind of a mystery is what they told me.
Because it's both hips and it's a shoulder. Yeah. It's an interesting question to ask, isn't it? I'm sure that you've racked your brain for so many different kind of reasons and ask lots of questions to lots of people.
Yeah, it is weird. I don't know what's going on. But then, then it just, and it wasn't both hips at the same time, both hip pain. It was after I got my left side done in February, I was rehabbing, doing all the physical therapy stuff. And then the same pain traveled to my right side, which is weird because I asked the doctors, does avascular necrosis, can it travel from joint to joint? What's the deal with that? And they said, no, not usually. And I was like, that's kind of weird because it's in my right hip now. And I got the MRI done and had to get that one replaced. So it's kind of weird. I'm a mystery.
So there was something else that you said that I was kind of keen to kind of dig into a little bit as well. You said that it kind of happened during COVID, and then there was like wait lists that were kind of pushed back and bits and pieces. I'm intrigued about your experience of having surgery during COVID times, because again, I know that so many people were on lists and pushed back and pushed back and pushed back for pretty obvious reasons. But I was just curious about your experience with that, how you felt about it in that situation, going into hospitals, having those conversations. Just tell us a little bit more about that experience, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, having surgery during COVID was wild. I've broken bones and stuff before, not during COVID. So I know kind of how hospitals work. And when I went in first, it was kind of freaky. It was like a ghost town in there. I had to do all my COVID tests before I could even go in the hospital. And there were no visitors. Obviously, you couldn't have family members join you in the waiting room or anything, which normally you can, I think. Or at least when you get out of surgery, you can see a family member. I couldn't see anybody. Nobody could come in. So it was kind of weird. With the technology they have these days, I was in and out in the same day. So it wasn't too bad, not having family members there. So my experience wasn't too bad. It was just kind of weird. It was, the halls were empty. I felt like the only person there. So it was kind of weird.
Kind of isolated.
So
how did that then play into kind of your experience pre and post surgery? So do you feel, looking back on things, that you were kind of given a lot of information? Did you feel like you were kind of well prepared going in? You knew what to expect. Kind of things happened as you were advised.
I think it was like 3 or 4 weeks before surgery, I had to do like a seminar where they walked through and pretty much laid out the procedure, what we're going to do, how we're going to do it. Pretty much get you informed on what they're going to do, which I liked, because I don't like just going in there blind and like, all right, just do what you need to do and I'll be here. You know, it was kind of freaky. So I wanted to get more information on it. And I think they did a great job on.
If anyone can hear this, Trevor's just disappeared for a moment because he let me know that they are having a massive storm over in Idaho at the moment. And I think that may have interrupted the connection, but I'm going to stick around and see if he comes back online again. Fingers crossed he'll be back soon. Here he is.
Oh my gosh, I'm sorry.
That's all right. No worries at all.
I don't know what happened there.
So I was just keeping the listeners informed. I think maybe the storm had something to do with the signal that's your end or something, perhaps. You said you're having a massive storm over in Idaho at the moment. So no worries. Let's just get straight back in.
Okay.
We were talking about being prepared and going through that experience and it being kind of what you'd been told that it would be. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then they were pretty informative. So the second time, I kind of obviously knew what I was coming into for my second surgery. So the second one went a lot more smoothly than the first, just because I knew what to expect. I knew the pain that was going to come afterwards. And I actually had a history of opiate abuse in the past. So I told my surgeon that I don't want any pain meds. So I was able to do all three surgeries with no pain meds, which was pretty cool. I'm proud of myself for that.
I definitely want to ask more questions about that, because pain post-surgery is something that a lot of people are worried about. It's an intimidating process to go through when you think about, you know, it's a big surgery to have, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on.
Oh, it's huge.
But, you know, there is a lot of discussion about the use of opioids and the use of that type of medication for pain relief post-surgery. Mm-hmm. It's a big conversation right now. So
yep.
I'm curious, when you knew that you were going to make a decision to not have that pain relief post-surgery, what kind of thoughts went through your mind? What strategies did you want to use? What strategies did you use? Were they effective?
I didn't really have a strategy. I just was kind of going into it thinking the first couple of days are gonna suck, because the pain is, if you're not moving, it's not too bad, but I just tried to stay ahead of it with Tylenol and Advil, and just tried to, like I said, stay in front of it. And after the first night, it wasn't too bad to where, you know, I needed to call my doctor or anything. So I just kind of just hung out and took Advil and Tylenol, and it seemed to work. And I know the doctors these days too are a little more reluctant on prescribing, you know, pain medication. They did offer it to me, but I, like I said, I said I don't want to get back into that. So
it's probably a really reassuring message for other people to know that, you know, there are people that do manage to go through it without those type of medications.
Totally.
And there are also a lot of surgeons out there that their protocol is to not provide that as a matter mm-hmm. of practice anyway. Yep. And then when there are so many people that are comparing stories, like certain people have had that type of medication, other people haven't, then, you know, I think there can be a bit of a fear of, oh, I don't have access to that. Am I going to be okay?
Right.
And, you know, I know from people that I've spoken to that can be a concern. So it's really reassuring to hear of people that have been through that process without having that medication, that have been able to mm-hmm. manage. And everybody's experience is going to be so completely different. So it's not to say that everyone will be able to manage without, or that it would be an easy process to go through without. But
yeah.
I do think it's useful for people to know that there are people that have had those experiences and have been able to manage to some degree. I'm sure it wasn't pleasant or wasn't easy in any respect for you, but that's a really, really cool message to put out there.
Just to show that it can be done, you know, I was able to do it. Yeah. And if you have issues, or like I did in the past, and you just don't want anything to do with them, or it's possible. So, yeah.
If you look back over everything before surgery, everything after surgery, is there anything that you wish that you would have known before you went into surgery?
Not really.
Oh, good.
Everything for mine honestly went pretty smoothly. I think I would have done a little bit more physical therapy afterwards, because in the middle of COVID, they gave me just a packet of paper and just said, do these workouts. You know, it wasn't really very structured. You know, if I'm left to my own devices to do it on my own, I'm not going to do it 100%. That's just me being honest. So the second time I went through, I actually went to a physical therapist for an hour twice a week, did it that way. So if I were to do it again, I would probably do the physical therapy 100%.
Brilliant.
Because it's easier to get lazy.
Very much so. And again, everybody's so different. You know, some people really need to be like held accountable, right? They need to know mm-hmm. that someone's going to check in on them and
exactly.
test them, to know that they've done their exercises, check in and just say, how have you been getting on? Because sometimes that's enough for you to be like, oh, I don't want to be that person that has to say,
yeah, that's how I was. And after the first one, I was like, I'm just going to do what they tell me, go in with an open mind. It seemed to work pretty well.
So how was the rehab? What sort of exercises did you get given? Were they manageable? Were they painful? Like they were
manageable. A little painful just because it's so early on. The wound and stuff is still fresh. But just like doing planks and just body weight stuff. pretty much just a lot of stuff off your back, lifting your legs up, going back down. So yeah, it was tolerable. It gets a little monotonous after two of them, two different cycles. So I kind of knew what to expect going into the second one. That's why I think my second replacement, I got better like way quicker. Like the first one, it took a couple months just to be back to normal, but I think I was kickboxing again after like 2 months of after my second one. So it was really quick.
I think I remember that moment because I had a message from you on Instagram to be like, I'm back to kickboxing. This is amazing. Like, I want to be able to like help, you know, share my story and
share it. Yeah.
To help inspire other people, because I know you've been actively sort of following and being inspired by other people's stories, and you know, you've been a very avid wanting to be able to help inspire other people as well, and that's kind of where these conversations started about being able to share your story, which has been awesome. So tell us a little bit more about the kickboxing, getting back into kickboxing, because that's one of your hobbies, right? I've seen them know, you've got a few other hobbies and bits and pieces which I'd love to kind of hone in on as well, but how did we get back into kickboxing after double hip replacement surgery? Because that's tough on the hips.
Actually, I never did it before my replacements. It was actually kind of a hobby to get back into shape afterwards. So I think I bought like a punching bag like 6 months after my my second hip. So surgeries are completely done, 6 months after. I bought it just to lose some weight and get back in shape, and I started loving it. And I think I'd lost like 20 pounds in a couple weeks, and I fell in love with it. So now I try and do it every day. It keeps my mind right, keeps my mental health on a flat plane, which is nice. So I don't know what I would have done if I didn't find it.
That's incredible. And this is one of the reasons that I think the conversation is so important to have, because you're also very young, and you're having hip replacements, and there are so many people that are told that they're too young to have hip replacements. Mm-hmm. And it's a conversation that is, there's so many conversations that I want to have around this kind of area with hip replacements and PAOs, like people being told that they're too young or too old to have these surgeries.
And yeah, that's crazy.
I just think my main bugbear is there any age that you have to justify having a good quality of life?
Right.
And there are so many medical advances now that there are people, there are people in their 20s that are having hip replacements, and they wouldn't be done if it wasn't worth the risk benefit ratio, right? Everybody should hopefully be weighed up as an individual to weigh up their quality of life versus their pain versus the risks of surgery versus so many different things. And as long as people are taken as a whole person and not just a diagnosis and a joint, it's something that really, really is important to me to have these kind of conversations. So like obviously you were quite younger. How did that feel, kind of sort of them talking to other people in your life about that? Did you get any kind of comments about age related stuff about your joints?
Oh 100%. Matter of fact, a funny story. I went into that seminar at the hospital just to get information on it. And I thought I was in the wrong room, because there was like, 80-year-olds, 70-year-olds getting hip replacements, knee replacements. And I'm like, am I in the right place? And I was, but I was the youngest person there by a long shot. So when I always thought of getting hip replacements, I always thought you were in, 60s, you're older and you need it. It's worn out, but I mean, it can happen to any age. It's just, there's a couple 20-year-olds I know that have had them done, and it's weird. It was hard to find someone in the same age group as me to ask questions with it about, how was your experience with it? So that was kind of hard finding people my age that have been through it. But I was able to manage and find some people.
Nice. Where did you find them, just out of interest? Was it sort of more
just on Instagram,
social media?
I just was searching Instagram and just found people and messaged them, kind of like you, and then we just had conversations and like, oh wow, yeah, we have something in common. So
is amazing, is it? Just to feel that little bit less alone, that's, you know, someone else has got a similar experience. It makes the world of difference.
Totally.
So something else that you mentioned was about sort of being able to exercise and kind of get back, well, get to doing kickboxing as a form of sort of regulating other things in your life, like looking after your mental health, you mentioned. So, you know, I think that's a really important discussion to have as well when we're thinking about weighing up, you know, joint replacement surgery with quality of life. You know, so many people use exercise as a method of being able to manage their life for so many reasons.
Yep.
Exactly. And I was kind of wondering whether you were happy to talk about, you know, the challenges that you faced with your mental health and how exercise and then being able to have that hip surgery and being able to exercise more has kind of affected that part of your life.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good question. Because right after my surgeries, I kind of went into a depression slump. Pretty bad one, because I couldn't move. You know, I was bedridden for 6 weeks. Right as I could walk again, I had to go right back in and get the other one done. So I was bedridden for another 6 weeks. And I'm a really active person. I love doing outdoor stuff, riding my motorcycle. And all that was just cut off, you know, like stopped. I was just on crutches and that's all I could do. So I got pretty depressed for a couple months. And as soon as I was able to get back outside and enjoy nature and take my dog for walks and stuff, it slowly started to get better. But I'm still battling that depression to this day, you know. So it's been 3 years and it's still I'm still not back to where I was before, but every day's a little better.
And the exercise is playing a part in being able to help you along.
Totally.
Some of the aspects of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the kickboxing too, just letting the energy out and getting your heartbeat going. And I didn't realize how important it is for your mental health just to do stuff.
Yeah,
just get absolutely. Your heartbeat going and exercise. And so, yeah, now I try and do that every day and it stay in front of it.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being open to discuss that a little bit. That's
sure.
really amazing. And again, something that I think a lot of people can relate to, because it's not a discussion that I think many people in this kind of culture that we have, it's not an easy discussion for people to have. And again, when there are people that are happy, absolutely. Yeah. So when there are people that are happy to open up and say, do you know what, this is really hard and this has affected me and it's difficult.
Yeah.
I think it allows other people to perhaps feel like they can talk when they perhaps wouldn't have done before. So yeah, really appreciate you opening up about that. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
So I'm curious about sort of what other things that you're kind of working towards or other goals that you've kind of got in mind. Like, how are you doing with like your work, your hobbies? Is there anything you're kind of working towards now with kind of these new replacements, new lease of sort of active life?
Not anything specific. I'm just trying to get back to just myself, you know. I'm working towards being able to jog, like I can jog and stuff again, but just being able to go running, and I'm pretty close to being there. And then I've been back to work full time and that's been kind of tough. I was a welder for a while building fire trucks, and it was really, there's a lot of manual labor involved, you know, bending down and climbing underneath trucks, and I had to change jobs because of it. So that was the only thing that's kind of hindered me a little bit. But other than that, everything's good. I just want to be able to go running again.
So if that's a really important goal for you, is that something that you're kind of actively looking at now in your rehab and your training? Like, is there sort of physio guidance that you've got going with that, or are you kind of going your own way and kind of putting stuff together for your own plan? What's the
Yeah, plan? Yeah, I'm just kind of doing it my own way. I've never really big into running. I just want to be able to show myself that I'm back to where I was before the surgeries, just to kind of prove that I made it. Because for a while I was at like 60-70%, and I was there for a year, you know. I wasn't getting any better. But now that I kind of took physiotherapy and all that seriously, it's gone up. So as long as I keep doing that, I'll get stronger and stronger.
So there was something you said there that kind of made me wonder, is there a certain level of physical activity that you kind of associate with your identity? Because you said, you know, I just know that I needed to get back to that to be me. And so physical activity is part of your mm-hmm. identity.
Yeah, for sure. Just outdoors, camping, mountain biking. So when I was just at home, I didn't feel like me, you know, I couldn't do any of the activities that I used to do. And then once I got better, the depression kind of halted me from doing those things also, because, you know, if you're real down and you motivation is low. And so, yeah, that was a tough time as well. But every day is getting better and we're taking it a day at a time.
So I'm also curious about the shoulder surgery. So you had avascular necrosis in both hips, but you've also mm-hmm. had that experience in your shoulder. How do you relate the experiences? Did the shoulder come before or after? How did that process kind of compare to the hips?
Yeah, it was, so I got my hips done and I think 2 years post-op, I was just hitting my punching bag, kicking it. And I threw a punch and it just kind of felt weird. And I knew exactly the same pain that was in my hip. You know, it's just that weird weight bearing pain. And I'm like, oh no, what just, and it wasn't just all of a sudden like I injured it. It kind of slowly got worse and worse. And I went and got the MRI done and yep, the avascular necrosis is back in your shoulder. Instead of doing a full replacement, we're going to do, it's pretty much a half replacement. They just replaced the ball and not the socket. So it was a lot less invasive. But yeah, just back in the hospital, got it done, was discharged that same day and back at it. Now I'm hoping this one doesn't start hurting. So I'll be four for four.
That's a legitimate concern, right? No one would blame you for wondering that same question. I think.
And I've been working out and boxing and it feels good. So, and surprisingly the shoulder I had surgery on is pretty much back to 100%. It's just range of motion is still a little bit limited. And like holding weight, like holding like a gallon of milk out is still kind of hard. But other than that, I can still kickbox and ride my dirt bike and do all the stuff I used to. So I'm happy with that.
That's really cool. And again, so inspiring for people to hear that you've been able to get back to the things that you love that are so important for you, that are such a part mm-hmm. of your identity. So that's really, really cool. Mm-hmm. If you look back over your journey with all of these surgeries, it was a good decision to have the surgeries, like in comparison to where 100%. You were before.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. They were getting pretty bad, you know, to the point where I was just stuck on the couch all day. You know, I needed help to go get something from the fridge. And I was tired of living like that. And I decided to, let's make a change and get some opinions on what's going on, because this is freaking me out. My hips shouldn't hurt like this. So yeah, I'm glad I'm 100%. I got them done.
I think it's another really common question that I get asked, which, you know, I can never answer these questions for people. Unfortunately, it's not my place. It's not my body. It's not my decision to make. But people say, you know, is it the right time to have it done? You know, how do I know when is the right time?
Right.
And I think everybody has a different answer to this. And again, it just depends on you and the things that you want to do in life, your quality of life, whether you're doing the things that mean that you feel like you're a whole person. And it's weighing up that quality of life with the risk and the benefit of the potential surgery that's coming on. Right. So you mentioned about going to the fridge that one day. Was that your kind of like your moment, your point that was like, I need to make a change. Whatever I need to do, it's worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was looking back at it. I'm kind of mad at myself for waiting that long. I've always had kind of a high pain threshold. If I were to do it again, I would probably go a little bit earlier and get it checked out. I don't want to be bedridden before I get it looked at, you know. I would just tell anybody, if it's affecting your daily quality of life, if it's on your mind all the time, or you can't go, you know, a half hour without thinking, oh man, this hurts, I'd get it looked at, just get an opinion on it. It won't hurt. And it's just good to have a professional look at it and see, just get an MRI on it and just get an outlay of what it looks like and how far it's progressed and stuff like that. So,
and lastly, before we wrap up, because I know we're a little short for time, I know you need to kind of go fairly shortly, but are there any kind of last sort of messages or tips or things that you've kind of learned about yourself or would be useful to other people that might be going through the start of this process, you know, about to get a hip replacement surgery? Any kind of final words of wisdom?
Yeah, I would just say network with people, ask questions. There's so many people on Instagram and Facebook that have gone through these experiences or know someone that does. And I got a lot of help from people online. So I'd just like to return that favor to anyone else that, you know, has questions. Feel free to ask any one of us, I'm sure. And it definitely helped a lot. So just ask for help, ask questions, and be educated on it.
Yeah. That's amazing advice. Thank you so much. And it's been really, really wonderful to have this time with you today and learn a bit more about your story. So thank you so much for your time.
No problem.
If people, like you said, if people want to contact you to have kind of those discussions that you mentioned, where can they find you on Instagram?
The username is Bionic Hippie on Instagram, and then just Trevor Hackett on Facebook. And I'm open to any questions. If anyone has anything, I'd love to help.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time again. It's been absolutely wonderful chatting with you. And we'll keep in touch.
Definitely. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
You have a good afternoon.
You too.